This is Richard Epcar, voice of Bato and Ghost in the Shell, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and you're listening to Nutty Bites. With me, as always, I have my regular co-host.
Hi, I'm Super Tech.
And I have a couple of awesome guests to join us. We have Miss Melis.
Hi, this is Miss Melis, the Bathtub Mermaid.
And we have our good friend from Megapodtastic,
Crazy Joe.
And Joe, are you in your pajamas yet?
Oh yes, I am.
Excellent.
Yes, I'm wearing Ewok pajamas.
Ooh, nice. I like those.
They're Christmas Ewok pajamas too. They say "Fa la 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 yub nub nub."
Fantastic.
How horrible.
So tonight we're going to be talking about superheroes, but we want to talk about superheroes, the non-conventional kinds, the non-franchise, superheroes that didn't start in comic books. So no Marvel, no DC, no Dark Horse, no Image, no Vagrant, Valiant, whatever it is.
Valiant.
But the exception is, if your character started somewhere else and then became a comic book, we will allow that.
Oh.
Do these ground rules make sense to everybody?
They make sense. They just made it harder, though.
Ah. Yes. Because you were thinking, oh, man, I can totally use Dark Horse.
No. No. Do I get to begin?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so one of the defining superheroes, quote, it has less to do with the individual characters and more to do with the writer, a man whose name we don't know. We only know his pseudonym, which is Masamune Shiro. Oh. And he wrote a little story called Ghost in the Shell and a bunch of others.
Ooh.
So my favorite superhero of all time is the Major, Motoko Kusanagi.
Who did start out in a manga, though.
In a manga. That's not quite a comic book. It's a light novel. It's a graphic novel. It's something a little different. It's not a North American pulp-style comic book.
So we'll start with a slight cheat?
We'll start with a cheat. But even from his other comic that he did before Ghost in the Shell, he did a thing called Appleseed. And there was a character called Dunin. And Dunin and the Major, they're very similar. And he has a very similar trope in all the books that he writes. But these strong, powerful women that are not overtly sexual. It's not about boobs and butt poses. It's not about fishnet bikinis. It's not about anything exploitative. It's about just powerful women, usually with a lot of guns, killing a lot of people.
Now, I don't know Appleseed. Are they both tsundere?
No. Dunin is actually in a... She's not very tsundere at all. She's in a committed relationship with her partner, Briareos. Okay. Briareos Hecatonicles, who is a cyborg at this point because he's been injured in battle, and he's a giant robot, and he with, like, five eyes and these, like, weird little bunny ears, which every now and then it breaks into, like, this super deformed style, and his, like, he anime ears, and they, like, flop over, and they, but it's, like, antenna on his head. Anyway, it's really weird, but it's a post-apocalyptic world where the entire world has been destroyed. They're the only two soldiers left alive, and they find out that they aren't, and there's this whole sort of a utopian society set up, and they join that as police officers, and in these giant robot suits, they beat up super criminals. Appleseed is awesome. Ghost in the Shell, even better. Ghost in the Shell, when you have nothing left, what does it mean to be human? About robots with guns shooting other robots with guns, and spider tanks, and...
But, I mean, like, Motoko... You know, the Major, she is a superhero. You know, she is out there fighting the good fight. Yes, she's working for the man, but she's doing it to help people. And there's a lot of stories of her helping the innocent, the small, so forth.
Oh, yeah.
So
and there's so been forth. a lot of spinoffs like the Standalone Complex.
And
other
she's
things.
Got her sidekick, which is Bato.
Bato, yeah. Voiced by the great Richard Epcar.
Which I should use that drop in at the beginning of this.
Absolutely, because be he awesome. Has done a drop in for you because Richard Epcar is awesome.
Yes. That is awesome. Joe, what is one of your favorite non-franchise, non-conventional superheroes?
Well, I'm going to start off with one that I don't know that many people would consider a superhero. I don't know that anyone would consider him a superhero. But in 1984, Nina in her song 99 Red Balloons told us everyone's a superhero,
everyone's a Captain Kirk.
So if it's good enough for Nina, then I'm going to say it's good enough for me and pick Captain Kirk as my number one choice.
I will allow it. Yes. Okay.
So I'm going to ask, by which, as we're watching this cat about to murder a dog.
Hang on, we'll pause to allow that to happen. Or to allow the fight to, yeah.
That is a small lion.
Do you need to get a spray bottle or something to intercept?
It's good. It's good now. If they're on opposite ends of the bed, they sleep in the same bed together.
But they hate each other.
If I'm not there in between them, that's when there's trouble.
But they seem to have found detente.
Yes.
So, Joe, the question I ask is, so Captain Kirk is not an obvious choice for a superhero. So what criteria are you using to make this choice? Why is Kirk super?
Well, we can agree he's a hero. I think everyone can agree Kirk is a hero.
Sure.
What makes him super? I think what makes him super is that superior strength, adversaries can wrap their arms tight around him, but he can always, always escape their grip by taking his hands and going, ugh, and hitting them on each side of their neck with the, and then they fall.
Or there's that very famous one where he like grips his two hands together and like double chops them on the back of the head. Absolutely.
He can make a mortar out of bamboo and rocks.
Oh, that poor Gorn. I think my favorite thing about Kirk as a superhero, though, is that while he may triumph over the villain in every episode, his shirt never does.
No. He does not have that awesome, like, super skin aura like Superman does.
No. Sadly, we always need to see William Shatner bare-chested by the end of the episode.
Also, he can't lose because he doesn't believe in the no-win scenario.
Right. Yeah, so even when presented with a no-win scenario, the very famous Kobayashi Maru, he reprograms the computer so he can't lose.
So one could argue that his superpower is confidence.
I always wondered why in the pilot episode of Star Trek Voyager, when Janeway was like, hey, I can help the Ocampa or I can get home, but I can't do both. What do I do? I always wondered why she didn't say, computer, activate the emergency holographic Kirk. I don't believe in the no-win scenario. And he'd find a way to do both.
I think the issue is that you can't program a Kirk because he is actually super.
So now I'm imagining this alternate pilot. It's like, there's a way to do both, and I need to do it by having sex with Janeway.
And the Ocampa, and the caretaker.
Right.
Who's with me?
And the caretaker, and the doctor, and hey, what's Paris doing right now? You get in here and join this thing, and bring some olive oil. It's going to get freaky.
And one more person to hold the camera.
So, Melissa, what is a superhero that you really like that is not?
Well, the only person I know who is going to know this one is Joe, because we talked about it in Messenger the other day. In 1976, very briefly, there were 16 episodes of a 12-minute, mini show on the Sid and Marty Krofft Super Show of Electra Woman and Dinah Girl.
I know of these. Mm.
They were actually a super campy, because 1976, female version of Batman and Robin, basically. You never knew their full names. You never learned them. They were Judy and Lori, and that's all we knew about them. But they had their little electric car, and they had their snazzy, flashy outfits that were basically leotards. I mean, they weren't even, spandex. They were literally leotards and colored tights with sequins. But yeah, Electra Woman and Dinah Girl.
I'm sorry.
It's come back.
Yeah, apparently.
Sid and Marty Krofft.
Grace Helberg and Hannah Hart. So,
seriously, are you wikiing something?
Yeah.
That's the back. The remake.
Yeah, there's a remake of Electra Woman and Hellgirl. And Dinah Girl, sorry.
That's really cool.
So, we're going to have to check that out.
Definitely.
The images of the original, though, are
so 70s.
Fantastic. I would have been all over this because I think I had that haircut. My pigtails and the really bad bangs.
I was six when this came out. So, I mean, when you're six, this would be pretty impressive.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was like the only thing, it was so rare to see live action female superheroes. There was this and there was Wonder Woman.
Absolutely.
Can we stop for a moment of silence for Linda Carter? Because, oh my God, Linda Carter.
But she's a conventional, you know, franchise. You know, yeah, she's
I know, but I just needed a minute.
Okay.
I would argue that Linda Carter herself is a superhero.
Yeah, that could definitely be made into an argument. But I'm going to go with a superhero from the 90s that is very personal to me and empowered me personally, and that is Xena the Warrior Princess.
Good choice. Oh, good choice. Absolutely.
And her superpower is she is freaking awesome. You know, throughout the show, like sometimes they make like you think, oh, is she actually a demigod? Is she actually the child of Ares? But then it never actually is. It's no, she is just a mortal that has so much rage inside of her that Ares was attracted to that and he wanted her to be his general. He wanted her to lead his armies, but she is amazing because she has all of this capacity for rage and viciousness. And I love her because she started out as a villain. And then, you know, people say, oh, Hercules made her good. No, no, no. Gabrielle made her good. Hercules showed her a different way, but it was Gabrielle. And throughout the entire show, you see that Gabrielle is keeping her on the path of good and showing her why it's important to fight for the little guy.
On a moderate tangent, I have to mention how disappointed I was in the Wonder Woman movie that came out a few years ago when their version of Ares was some mustachioed British dude. And, you know, here I am expecting the God of War, and it's some dude with a mustache and a bad hat.
Well,
I was not happy.
Yeah, Arthur Weasley being the God of War is not the most impressive, but I think they were trying to subvert our expectations. But that's because, unfortunately, Kevin Smith, the actor, not that Kevin Smith.
I was going to say, Kevin Smith, they had Blunt Man?
No, not that Kevin Smith, the other Kevin Smith. He passed away and could not continue the role. And, well, you know, you're never going to beat that. He was so good as Ares. And that's where I first saw Carl Urban.
McCoy?
Yes, Dr. McCoy played Caesar and Eros.
Wait, Judge Dredd?
Yes, played both Caesar and Eros on that show. And the almighty...
Wait. Caesar was Eros?
They were two different
That changes
characters.
A lot of things I know about history.
It was two different characters, but it was played by the same actor. And the almighty Bruce Campbell played Autolycus, the Prince of Thieves. And Sam Raimi's brother, Ted Raimi, was Joxer the Mighty, which was a buffoon type character, but so you know him from every Sam Raimi movie.
There was the other shows that they did in this same arc with Kevin Sorbo as Hercules, the Legendary Journeys.
Yep,
right. And then there was it Sinbad was the other one, or what was the other one? In
no,
that arc?
Well, they did
not Sinbad the comedian, but
they did like some time traveling. like detective thing that didn't live very long with Bruce Campbell. I can't remember that. And then it wasn't them, but it was in the same vein. They were trying to be like them. Was Cleopatra 2525?
Right. Did they cross over? Did those shows ever cross over? Like the Hercules and Xena
did. Okay. And then that one time traveling one, but the Cleopatra 2525 is distinct for the simple reason that it was Gina Torres, and we all love Gina Torres.
Cause she was Zoe.
There was thing we ever saw her in.
Yeah.
There was one other spinoff of Hercules and Xena, if you recall. And that was Young Hercules.
Oh,
starring a young actor by the name of Ryan Gosling.
No way.
Really? That's horrible.
Yep.
That's horrible.
He was
young Kevin Sorbo.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. There he is. Yep. I'm assuming instead of filming it in New Zealand, they filmed it in Canada then.
I don't know.
Oh my God. It is.
I gotta be honest. I never watched any of those shows. Hercules, Xena. I remember them being on, but I never watched them.
Yeah. For me, it was, well, this was at a time when I only had a few channels. We did not have cable. Although it crossed over into when I moved out and then I did have cable. But it was basically my Saturdays were Hercules, Xena, Star Trek. It was Star Trek TNG, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and that was 4 hours of programming. And I was like, I am going to watch this stuff.
So instead of playing with the word superhero, which is what we've done so far, in you know what defines a superhero, I am going to flip this around and play with what we define as the word favorite.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of things that we remember and a lot of things that we know that we don't really like, but they stick in our head like a bad smell. So maybe this is just me being Canadian, but I remember growing up with a show that I never wanted to watch, but when there was nothing else on, you were stuck watching a really badly animated show called Rocket Robin Hood. Oof. Which I'm guessing from the vacant stares of everyone else in the audience, no one else has seen this. So this was a show that was obviously animated to a budget in the mid-70s. It is awful. All of the monsters make the same noise. They also had like a Space Hercules show done by the same animation company, which is even worse. But Rocket Robin Hood was the story of Robin Hood, but it was the Sherwood asteroid field. And it was set in space. So it was like the Merry Men on like rocket boots flying through space, beating up space dragons.
Here.
Just add the word space in front of anything in the Robin Hood tale. And it was so horrible. It's still stuck in my head.
So are you just saying this is something that I can't get out of my head, so I must share my misery with everyone?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. But the theme song
is
in
here.
Do you
feel better now?
No, I don't feel better at all. This is like PTSD with a toothache. I mean, it is just, it's in there good. I recommend everyone, I don't recommend, but I force everyone to go watch an episode on YouTube or at least listen to the theme song so you can get this burned into your brain like a bad smell too. Go ahead.
You realize now Shane is going to be sending us clips and telling us how much he loved this show.
Right, or how much I have now hurt his brain. You're welcome, Shane. We love you, super fan.
I just looked it up. Yeah. I looked it up, and apparently it's a Canadian series that did air in the United States, but only in the 60s.
In the 60s?
It was produced between 66 and 69.
Okay.
And apparently it ran.
I'm not even old enough to have seen it.
The reruns apparently ran in Canada all the way through the 80s. However, in the U.S., it only aired in the late 60s.
Right. So I watched that as an 80s kid because I was only born in 78. So it was in the mid-80s that, early in the morning before going to school, you had a choice of nothing, the news, or Rocket Robin Hood. You watched Rocket Robin Hood.
Wow. All right, so let's get back on track with something good. Let's get a fun superhero. Joe?
Well, I can give you another good one, but if I can real quick just throw in another one that I hated but watched because it was on.
Sure.
Does anyone remember Courageous Cat and Minute Mouse?
I actually remember that.
No.
I did not like it, but it was all that was on at like 6 in the morning on Sunday morning, so I watched it. But anyway, on to the good stuff. Now, this one is stretching the term superhero to the limit. However, he did not originate in a comic book. He originated in real life because he's a real guy. And he was on TV and he was in the movies. But in the 90s, a comic book company decided to write a comic book about him and they billed him as the real life superhero. That was how they billed him. And that guy is one of my favorite people in the world, the one and only Mr. T.
I pity the fool that doesn't love Mr. T.
Absolutely.
Yes, I agree with this 100%. I love Mr. T. And by the way, if anyone did not see Mr. T talking about his thoughts on the Olympics during the last Olympics, it is a treat. That man is gold. What was that video? I think, Joe, you sent it to me where Mr. T was helping us with our self-confidence and not dressing like other fools. Don't put somebody else's name on your clothes. Put your name on your clothes. Kevin Klein's not going to wear your name, so you shouldn't wear his.
Yes. That is from the 1984 inspirational children's video, Mr. T's Be Somebody or Be Somebody's Fool. This is also the same video that produced the oft emailed viral YouTube video of Mr. T rapping "Treat Your Mama Right." That came from that video as well. But that is such a tremendous video.
I love Mr. T so much. He was my favorite part of A-Team. And then I think Barkley was my second favorite part of A-Team.
Oh, Reg.
Which I didn't realize was the same guy until like I was 35 and I was like, wait, really?
There is a supercut of all of his scenes in A-Team where he's singing.
Oh.
And it is hilarious.
Oh, he's so talented. But yes, I love Mr. T. One of my favorite cosplays that I've ever seen was when I went to New York Comic Con and somebody was cosplaying as Mr. T. And he had this giant, like, pipe cannon prop gun that he had with him. It was amazing. And talking to the guy, he was very Mr. T-like. I mean, very positive, uplifting. We had a really great conversation.
But there are real-life Mr. T clones, let's say. Mm-hmm. I think the first one that comes to mind is that guy who's always running for office in New York City who wants to talk about how the rent is too damn high. The
rent is too damn
too damn high! I love that guy!
Yes. There were quite a few of them that worked as volunteer security guards at some of the schools I worked in Florida. Absolutely. Although they didn't have the ripped clothing. They definitely always wore suits, but they did have a very Mr. T-like bling. Mm. And usually one of those pieces would be a gigantic crucifix. But yeah, no, they were very, very wonderful people, and very positive, you know, in what they were doing with their time. No, I love Mr. T. By the way, I looked up Courageous Cat and Minute Mouse. Apparently that was released between 1960 and 1962. The artwork looks very familiar, and I don't know if it's just because it looks like a knockoff.
Go to
Mickey
the creator.
Mouse.
So created by a guy named Bob Kane. Yep. Look him up, because yeah. He's probably done.
He's the creator of Batman.
Yeah, Bob Kane.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he is very, yeah, very well known.
Oh, so that's why the art style's familiar. It's the original Batman.
Yeah.
All right, that's cool. So I'm going to ask Joe if I can mention this one next. I think it was a big production house that came out with it, but one of my favorite superheroes from the 90s, if I can mention it in this show, is the Max.
Oh, love the Max.
I do believe the Max originated in a comic book, though. Dark Horse, I think.
Was it Dark Horse
or was
Image?
It Image? It might have been Image.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then there was an MTV series afterwards.
Which is how I knew him, was from the MTV series, and I got the comics afterwards. But if people here don't know the Max, find the TV show and watch it or read the book. It is a wonderfully trippy story.
Yeah, it is Image. It is Image. So. Okay. We do have the full volume of the entire
I do
run.
I have a couple to add.
Mm. Go right ahead.
I have three, actually.
Go ahead.
Okay, the first one, you're going to tell me, is a DC character, but it did not start as a DC character. Okay. It started as an original Filmation television character in the 70s, and that is Mighty Isis.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
It's part of the Shazam Hour, but she was television before she was added to the comic.
The Shazam and Isis Hour.
Yeah, I wanted to add on that my sister was telling me about how much she loved Isis when... So Shazam was coming out, and she was up visiting in Toronto, but it wasn't quite out yet. And she knew she would have to see that with her fiancé because he loved Shazam, and they grew up together. But she said, I remember Shazam. It was Isis and Shazam, and it was great. And she's going on and on. I'm like, I don't remember Isis. But she's going on and on about the TV show and everything. We ended up seeing Captain Marvel, which is where all this came about, because then I had to explain, yeah, by the way, Shazam is Captain Marvel. And she's like, yeah, that's what I thought. And yes, Isis, she was all like, probably spent a good hour and a half telling me about, Isis, the
okay.
Mighty Isis.
So my other two are less superhero-y, but I would consider them superheroes. And that is the $6 Million Man.
Yes.
And the Bionic Woman.
Yes. That 100% counts.
They were cyborgs before Cyborg was a cyborg.
Yes,
yes they
were.
Nice.
We can rebuild them. We have the technology. Yeah, I agree. Those are fantastic. I'm going to go another old school TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a guy that he finds a suit, puts it on, has no instructions. And he
absolutely.
We are talking about the greatest American superhero.
We actually own that on DVD.
Do you know the interesting thing about that show? The weird thing about the final episode. You know the weird thing about how that final episode happened?
Mm-hmm.
If you buy the DVDs, or if you watch it in syndication, the final episode of the series is called The Greatest American Heroine. And Ralph is forced to give up the suit to someone else. And a woman gets the suit and she takes over the suit. That's the final episode of the series. It was made years after all the other episodes because it was actually a backdoor pilot for a spinoff series called The Greatest American Heroine. The series never got picked up, so they just tacked it on to the syndication run of the original show as the now the final episode. But it was made about 6 or 7 years later after the rest of the shows.
I had no idea.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's really fun. By the way, Mighty Isis, apparently the actress that played her, was known for her roles in McMillan and Wife and The Amazing Spider-Man.
Nice.
Fantastic.
The Mighty Isis, as Melissa pointed out, did start off on TV in Shazam, but later on was adapted into the comics. And the character is currently now appearing every week on Legends of Tomorrow on the CW.
Version of the character.
Yeah, they've changed her name. And they don't call her Isis anymore because word Isis kind of got a bad connotation a few years ago.
They even got rid of the name Isis.
They did that with The Greatest American Hero, too. He was original because the character is Ralph Hinkley.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they as soon as that shooting happened, he was Mr. H.
They eventually changed his name to Ralph Hanley.
But they never actually used his whole name.
Yeah.
Yeah. They changed it back eventually. Like, I think like sometime later, they're like, people, it's out of the news
it's
now.
Old.
Even on Archer, they got the intelligence agency they worked for was named ISIS. And just when the whole ISIS thing happened in reality, there was kind of a cough moment and they just sort of rolled. They literally rolled the old logo off camera and never mentioned it again.
Yep. They've never mentioned that they used to work for something called ISIS again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stretching the definition of a superhero again. How about a guy who should have died about 1,000 times over, but either through the cohorts that he's with or plutonium or whatever, just manages to live again to yet again foil a terrorist organization plotting to rule over the world. The organization name is Chaos.
He I knew you were going there.
For an organization called Control. His name is Maxwell Smart, Agent 86 of Control from the TV show Get Smart. One of my favorite TV show of all time.
I loved that show.
I totally approve of this answer, by the way. I love it, I do have to take a moment. And as a former cast member of Slice of Sci-Fi, thank you for keeping plutonium alive.
Yes.
That word.
And let's not forget Agent 99.
And loving it. Right. Because Max should have died at least 6 times every episode, if not for the interventions from the amazing 99, who is probably Barbara Feldon and everything that she's done for the character, probably the real superhero in keeping this franchise alive. Max, let's not forget that Don Adams, peace be unto him, the portrayal that he has done of that character was so influential that when a TV show came out in the 80s, a cartoon called Inspector Gadget, about a bumbling inspector who goes around solving crimes because his niece and her dog go around solving it all behind the scenes while he doesn't notice, they got Don Adams to voice Inspector Gadget. So we basically got more Maxwell Smart episodes done in cartoon form.
Yep.
Now, here's a question. How big of a Get Smart fan are you?
About as big as they get.
Does it bother you?
Mm-hmm.
Does it bother? I know some people will say, it doesn't even count. It doesn't even count. We don't acknowledge it, but I can't go there. Mm-hmm. I got to acknowledge it. It's there. It exists.
Okay.
Does it bother you that the series ended And then we got the movie The Nude Bomb, and not a single reference was made to 99 the entire movie. And he's dating other women like 99 never existed. And then just a few short years later, Get Smart Again comes out, and 99's back like nothing ever happened. Were they temporarily separated? What the heck?
No, The Nude Bomb was a project that they had going on the whole time, and no one would pick it up. I've never seen it, nor do I want to, because it doesn't fall into canon, question mark?
Oh, I do own the DVD. Oh. I do enjoy it.
Oh. Get Smart Again, I really liked. I think it's fantastic. Now, the one that I choose to ignore was when Fox came out with a reboot of the series where they had Andy Dick playing the son of Smart.
See, I actually liked that. I got that series on DVD too.
Where he had his Nike cell phone shoe phone. It was ham-fisted.
And a fax machine necktie.
And a fax machine neck, of course. I don't remember. I'm sorry, but did Bernie Coppell come back as Siegfried?
Oh, he did.
Oh, okay.
He did.
Oh, perfect.
My favorite character on the Andy Dick series was Agent Zero.
Okay.
Who was a master of disguise who was played every week by a different actor.
That's awesome.
In the first episode, it was Robert Goulet.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's funny.
Nice.
So, I've got a couple that I'm going to mention. And one is bigger in my memory, and I never want to watch it again because I don't want to see how bad it really is, and that is Gem and the Holograms.
Ooh.
I actually have watched a couple episodes, and it's not horrible. Recently is what I'm saying. It's not horrible, but I really don't need to see it.
We're not going to watch the movie, is what you're saying?
That is not Gem and the Holograms. That was a Disney movie that they put Gem and the Holograms on. That was a horrible, horrible project.
I think that means your answer is no.
Yeah. When the creator said, I will help you, I don't even care if you pay me scale, and they say no, and she says, okay, this is not Gem and the Holograms. Yeah, it was terrible.
To be fair, it wasn't Disney. I just gotta say this because Disney gets beat up all the time. It was Universal.
But it was a Disney style script, you know, and somebody had written it, and then they just made it Gem in the Holograms, is my point. I would be remiss, and Shane and Bob would be very upset if I did not mention the Avengers, not those Avengers, the original Avengers.
How now, Bronco?
Yes.
Emma Peel and John Steed? Whatever. Steed. We only care about Emma Peel. Come on, Diana.
True.
They are fantastic. And, you know, honestly, how much of the Kingsman was influenced by them?
Almost all of it.
Yeah.
I want to add one on behalf of Christine. I want to add the three young women in H2O Just Add Water.
That's that mermaid movie I am not going to watch that's on Netflix, right?
It is not a movie. It's a series.
It's a TV series.
Oh, boy.
It's an Australian teen drama.
One of those mermaids was the star of the movie 47 Meters Down.
Yeah.
But if she had been a mermaid in 47 Meters Down, she might have fared better.
Yeah. So, by the way, yeah, I am confirming Joe is right. I was 100% wrong. I had no idea that Hit Girl started in a Marvel comic series. They had 8 issues. Wow. I just thought that was a
response. It's Mark Millar.
Yeah. No, I am sorry. I did not know this.
Take that, Nutty.
But I will say it is my favorite role that Nicolas Cage has ever played.
Oh, Nicolas Cage!
I think
so
he does
good.
His best acting in that movie.
What
the relationship between Hit Girl and Big Daddy is probably
what?
Yes, it's much better than Con Air.
It is not terrible. Better than Con Air. That is the best movie ever.
Okay, in his acting performance,
yes.
That's his best acting.
Oh, come on.
Are you guys Community fans?
I've watched most of Community, yeah.
I have
did
not.
Did you ever see the one where Abed was in the class on Nicolas Cage?
No.
Oh, my God. It's so great. There was a whole college class on Nicolas Cage, and the class was called Nicolas Cage, Is He Good? And it was a debate, and Shirley had the line, I don't know. I think if I start in 100 movies and just randomly talk to different volumes, I might accidentally win an Oscar too.
There is that. There is that. So if you listen to Hooplecast, there was a segment that they would have called Timothy Olyphant, good actor? And then, because I think one of the problems in that show was that the character of Seth Bullock was so terse, you can't tell, is he acting? What's going on here?
But he was good in Santa Clarita Diet.
Oh, he cracked me up in Santa Clarita Diet.
I think Timothy Olyphant might be the reason that Scream 2 is my favorite of the Scream movies.
How did he play
Scream
2?
I have a hero to add, but I have to get a visual aid. I'll be right back.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. This is going to be good.
That's okay. While she does that, I'm looking up Scream 2 because I don't remember him in Scream 2, but then at the same time...
It's the first thing I ever saw him in, actually.
Who's the killer in Scream 1?
I don't know. Skeet Ulrich.
Spoiler for a movie that's
over 20 years old.
He also had a great cameo. Timothy Olyphant had a great cameo in Archer.
Yes.
As Luke the Spook.
I can't believe you spoiled that, Joe.
I remember when my dad was watching Scream.
This is my hero.
Time. Oh.
Zoe. Absolutely.
The star of Cleopatra 2525.
Yes. Zoe is 100% a fantastic superhero. And I will add on to that, that show has a couple of superheroes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. But Zoe's my favorite. And if you have been a longtime listener, you know that my favorite romantic couple is Zoe and Wash, because I feel like it's the only time we see couples realistic. They fight, but they love each other. You know, it's not about chemistry. It's about real life and real relationships.
They argue the way real couples argue.
Exactly.
When they put it aside. Well, you know, to be fair, you're saying the first time. I don't know. Frasier and Lilith were pretty realistic.
but that was a sitcom, so it doesn't count.
their love was based on mutual hatred. So I mean,
Hey, Nutty.
Although,
how do
Baby New Earth?
How do reavers clean their spears?
Oh, no.
They run them through the wash.
Oh, I get it.
My favorite is that we first heard that joke. Alan Tudyk is saying it on a panel. Yeah. And everyone, and Nathan Fillion's like, whoa, too soon.
Too soon.
Alan Tudyk is so cool. We met him at the Great Philly Comic Con a couple years ago, and Jackie was with us. And he started talking to her as K2SO, doing the K2SO mm-hmm. voice. But then he started talking to her as the Duke of Weaselton from Frozen. And he even clucked like "Hey Hey" from Moana. He was so great with her. It was terrific.
And now there's a couple of shows. Well, one show that Nutty's watching that he's on as mm-hmm. What is he?
He's Mr. Nobody in Doom Patrol, Joe has already listened to me talk about.
Right, and we just finished together watching The Tick, where he's the voice of Danger Boat.
I love Danger Boat.
Did you guys watch Powers? Or Powerless? Powerless.
Powerless, that sounds familiar.
It was the DC Comics sitcom that aired on NBC about the normal people who lived in the DC universe.
I remember hearing about that.
He played Bruce Wayne's cousin, Van Wayne.
Yes! We watched that.
I'm looking at a picture.
It had potential, but it needed help.
I thought it was solid. I thought it was on its way.
It got canceled too soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was on NBC, so I mean, like.
It would have worked better, I think, on a different network.
It would have worked better on CW if, the real superheroes who guest starred were people like, Green Arrow and the Flash, like they were getting characters that most of the general public doesn't know, like Green Fury.
Well, the problem was it wasn't on CW, so they couldn't have crossovers,
right?
And they needed to have those cameos.
I'm also going to say, not having seen anything having to do with it, I think hiring the star of High School Musical as one of their leads might have sent the wrong message to certain viewers.
See, here's the thing. I didn't even know she was in High School Musical. I watched every episode, like, and I didn't know that.
I'm like, Vanessa Hudgens, I know that name. I have never seen High School Musical. I just know that, like, you know, people come from there.
Well, I have another superhero.
Go right ahead.
Who did not originate in a comic book.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm gonna throw out there Mr. Chuck Bartowski.
Yeah, okay, Chuck. Chuck works. Remember, that was the – you didn't watch it, but it was he downloaded – a program that turned him into a super spy.
The TV show Chuck?
Yeah, that's the Best Buy in the subway.
Right, with the really hot blonde girl?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and all this, and the show with the hot blonde girl and all the subway footlong jokes.
Yes.
Okay, that show. That yeah, show. No, though, never watched.
Though he did eventually become a DC superhero because he became Captain Marvel, but yes. but we knew him way back when.
Way back when.
And honestly, I think he did such a good job. I know Shazam is a conventional whatever. He did such a good job as Shazam, though. Like,
that was a good movie. I enjoyed that movie.
It was so good. I think one of the reasons that it worked so well is he loved the material so much.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what makes these things work well, is when somebody loves the material.
That movie, I'm sorry, I have so much love for that movie. I think it's one of the best superhero movies ever made.
I am upset that it is, like, when you look up the best movies so far of 2019, it never makes the list, and it's amazing.
It got overshadowed. It came out between Captain Marvel and Endgame.
Yeah.
And Captain Marvel had the connection to the Marvel Universe, so Endgame actually gave that movie a second life. Like, it was already a huge hit.
Yeah.
But, you know, it had been out for a few months, so it was dying down. It wasn't, you know, doing as well. Everyone had seen it. But then Endgame came out, and suddenly people couldn't get into Endgame because it was selling out show after show. So people were like, oh, let's go see Captain Marvel again because of the connection. And suddenly that movie shot up again, and poor Shazam was just lost in the shuffle.
And to me, watching Captain Marvel and then one week and then, like, maybe 2 weeks later watching Shazam, they were so perfect together, which is really funny because of the whole name connection thing, but they have nothing to do with each other, but they are two of my favorite movies this year.
I agree.
Love them so much. Both
I agree. And as much as I love Captain Marvel, and I saw it like four times in the movies, I loved it. I think Shazam was the better movie. And it got ignored, unfortunately.
Well,
I mean, it did well enough. It was a hit, but it was a mild hit.
I really enjoyed it.
I didn't see it until it was on video, because I was flat on my back with bronchitis all spring.
Right.
So I have a visual component to my next choice.
Okay.
Superheroes that did not start in a comic book. Ready? Go.
I know who that is.
Nice. Melissa's like.
Right. So for my choice, I pick the Mega Man. I love the Mega Man games. It started on Nintendo in the 80s. They've moved on to various platforms since then. We are up to 11 or 12 mainstream Mega Man games, about a bajillion if you count all of the other games that go on therein. Known as Rockman in Japan, the driving theme that has gone through all of the video games therein and TV shows and whatever is that there is always a really good soundtrack of some really cool rock music playing on in the background, hence the name and a bunch of the puns in the show therein. But it's a show about a robot made by a guy named Dr. Light who has to fight the robots made by a guy named Dr. Wily. And that's about all the premise you need to know. It's a robot. He fights things.
Great music.
And he has a gun for a left arm, and he jumps and he shoots things. And it is so cool and so fun, and the music is awesome. And I could probably, I don't know, sing about 1,000 of the songs from that show or from the games. And I probably got a few of the levels.
I think you need to sing now.
It's Tech-Man.
Everyone else sang, so you it's your turn.
Well, he sang earlier with Greatest American Hero.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So, lightning round, any rapid fire heroes that you guys want to throw out before we wrap this up?
Sam Beckett.
Captain Caveman!
On that note, I have to say, and the heart, Captain Planet!
I already said it on Megapodtastic for the dog days of podcasting, but I cannot leave out Super Grover.
Yeah, Super Grover.
And he's cute too.
And he's cute too. My mommy made my costume.
I love, I will throw in Jackie's, which is, I think it was Jackie's, the Thundercats.
Especially Chitara. Nice.
And I will close this out with my favorite, and I think everyone's favorite superhero of them all, Rory.
Rory.
Rory. Rory.
Absolutely. Rory wins.
Rory wins.
I should have put on my new shirt.
Yeah. Oh, well. So thank you so much for joining us. Joe, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me over at megapodtastic.com. You can find the Megapodtastic podcast wherever podcasts are sold for free, because we don't actually sell them. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever. I don't know. Wherever you get a podcast. And youtube.com/megapodtastic.
And Melissa, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at bathtubmermaid.com.
And thank you so much for joining us. And tell us, who are some of your favorite non-franchise superheroes? And you can hear all the links and where to do that in the outro. Thanks so much for joining us. Bye.
Bye.
Space is claustrophobic in here. These are the characters of the MPAD booth. Their continuing mission, to perform brand new scenes weekly in unpredictable combinations, to boldly challenge you like never before.
Characters is irrelevant. Self-determination is irrelevant. You must comply. I am the Rebel of Thorn. Resistance is futile. Your life, as it has been, is over. From this time forward, you will service us.
Come play Mad TV Mayhem Star Trek The Next Generation Edition. Episodes will drop weekly on Wednesday evenings at 8:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Points will be awarded for guessing the correct season and episode. Who will win the title? Who will win the grand prize? The voyage starts on October 30th. Come check us out for more details at nimlas.org. That's NIMLAS.ORG.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.